Hi, everybody. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. Today, we have a special guest, an old friend and colleague of mine, Chrissy Positek. Some of you might know her work and the books that she's offered to parents who have children that are struggling with mental health and addiction. And we're very, very pleased to welcome her to the podcast today. Welcome, Chrissy.
Thank you, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your history and kind of how you got into parent coaching from your beginnings. You're working in wilderness therapy. Tell us a little bit about your roots.
Yeah, well, I worked in a few different wilderness programs and primarily worked with you, Brad, at Second Nature for a long time. And wilderness really imprinted me very strongly. I felt like it was just an incredible container for kids' growth and maturation that is just hard to replicate in office therapy. And as I was leaving wilderness, I was moving back to the East Coast. My daughter was a little over one, and I just felt like the wilderness work was a little hard, and I just wanted to be closer to family. Many consultants recommended I do parent work, which was a whole new thing for me to sort of switch the client from the teen or the adolescent to the parents, because it was so used to and comfortable talking about the child. And so, you know, I wanted to stay connected to this field. I really believe in the wilderness model and the transformative effect of wilderness. And so I, you know, this was around 2006. I just started working with parents and parent coaching, which, you know, ultimately led to writing my book.
I'm kind of curious about that, because your first book, and we'll talk about your others a little bit later, but your first book, The Parallel Process, has made a huge impact on so many of the families that I've seen, that I've worked with in the past several years. So tell us about the impetus in writing The Parallel Process.
Absolutely. Thank you. You know, it was really one of those things that I just had this book in my head. I found that, you know, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, where I'd have a parent call day where I'd be on the phone back to back, hour after hour, talking to parents. I'd sort of hang up, pick up the next call, hang up, pick up the next call. And I realized I was saying a lot of the same things over and over and over. And parents wanted to work on themselves, right? They wanted, what should we do, Chrissy, until our next call? And, you know, there's a lot of wonderful books out there that I used for particular issues, say, you know, around addictions or adoption or different theme type books. But there was no book really addressing this stuck parent-child system, which I called enmeshment. There's some great books on codependency, but they don't tend to talk as much about the parent-child relationship. And so I found myself really wanting a book to direct parents to, honestly. And so I had this book in my head, and when my youngest child started preschool, I sort of felt like I had this little opening in my life. And so I just sat down and wrote the book. I truthfully didn't know it would get published. I didn't know, you know, it would go anywhere, but it has found its way to a lot of these programs, which has just been very, very cool for me.
I think I've said this to you before. I think you have the best title, The Parallel Process. And that title tells so much about what you ask parents, invite parents to do in that work. Is there anything that came from that? Like, how did that come to you? Was it just easy for you to think about, or was it something that you had been thinking about for a long time and kind of developed over time?
You know, I think I was searching for a title for a while, and I think I just came across some article that said The Parallel Process, and I don't even know if it was used in the parent-child context, but it just struck me as, that's it. I don't know. It just, like, a light bulb went off, and I'm like, that's the title. And really how I frame it as the parallel process is the parent's opportunity to grow alongside their child, right? We're so focused on our children's growth, our children's maturation, right? Our children's milestones and developmental process. But what about the parents, you know, developmental process? What about the parents' growth process? What about the parents' edge? And as you know, Brad, you know, working in this field, having a child struggle brings up our issues, right? It's painful. Mm-hmm. It triggers us. And I see that, you know, obviously we can feel like victims, or we can feel, just bad for ourselves or guilty about our parenting, or we can flip it around and we can see it as an opportunity to grow, to learn, to expand, to maybe reparent ourselves from things that we lacked from our parents. So I try to reframe it as a really rich opportunity. And I felt like the parallel process encompassed that, you know, that title.
It's a beautiful title. It says so much just in the title. So tell us a little bit about your new digital program, Transforming Your Parenting, a Parallel Process Intensive. I'm curious about that.
Yeah. So, a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, parents started to tell me, you know, Chrissy, I love your book. It's so helpful. It totally makes sense, but I don't know how to put it into practice. So I started doing some workshops, you know, in different cities, and that was exciting. But as you know, everyone's busy. And I remember one time I went to Chicago and then someone was like, oh, when are you coming back? I'm like, I don't know when I'm coming back to Chicago. So it's just hard to do the face-to-face, really. And so I shortly after that developed an online class, which was a 30-day parallel process intensive that I offered twice a year, which was email and webinar based. But even with that, I got a lot of parents saying, you know, Chrissy, when's the next class going to be offered? So I really wanted to create a platform where parents can just click on whenever they're sort of in that place where they're really wanting to go deeper, they can just do this sort of self-paced class. It's all the same content. It's designed to be done in a 30-day period, but it's parents have lifetime access to the course, which is really exciting. And it's all video and truthfully audio-based. Actually, I was recommended to do more audios because parents are so busy. So they can listen in the car, they can listen when they're doing the dishes. And I'm really walking them through, you know, it's about 6 hours of content, the parallel process in more of an in-depth way. And there's written assignments, there's journal assignments, there's sort of a self-reflection piece. And then there's action items where parents have to then apply that content to their parenting, you know, that day or that week. And so it's designed to be much more integrated and take the parents through this deeper intensive. And I'm really excited about it because I feel, you know, this is sort of where it's going, truthfully, because sometimes when I have a family come to me for parent coaching, I, you know, on one level can't work with every family. I tend to have a wait list. But on another level, when we start to do parent coaching, parents will just dive right into the issues with their child. And there's a part of me that really wants to upload them on all this content first, the sort of the philosophy or the framework of the parallel process, and then we can apply it to their parenting. So actually, I find that doing the class is very, very supportive to, you know, in addition to parent coaching or even without parent coaching, because there's just so much content for parents to really understand the sort of new philosophy around, say, being in your parental authority, right? Learning how to set boundaries and limits, learning how to emotionally attune to our children, learning how to let them struggle. All of these things are very, very hard, but what I try to do is break it down and walk them through it and give them examples. So it's very, so much of what I find, and I'm, you know, imagine you find this as well, is what parents lack today is confidence, right? They're, you know, they have really good instincts, right? You know, a lot of parents sort of know what they want, but they lack confidence because their child has learned to undermine them and they doubt themselves. And they, you know, am I being that crazy parent? Am I being too strict? And then they almost want approval from their child. Am I doing this right? You know, I was just talking to a parent recently and she's like, Chrissy, you know, should I tell my child all this so he understands why I'm having a boundary? And to me, that's sort of an example of enmeshment, right? It's like we want them to approve of something before right. We hold a boundary rather than just being in their parental authority and saying, these are the rules, these are our expectations. And actually that creates safety. And that actually makes anxiety go down. Sometimes I say when the parents are parents, kids can be kids and kids can relax and play and just, you know, reduce their nervous systems. And, you know, when we give kids so much power, we give them so much choice in the home, they don't have the maturity level. They don't have the prefrontal cortex development to manage that freedom, that power. And actually what it does is it increases anxiety. So as I sort of go through all the content of the class, I think what it does is it helps parents build confidence and get clearer, because a lot of them, again, are really good parents. It's just they've lost some of their confidence. And the more they get clearer, the more they can step into their authority and set a clear, I call, container in the home, right? A clear container for attunement, for boundaries, to let their kids struggle and mature. And without that confidence, right, kids can just tip them over, you know? Kids know how to push the buttons to get the parents spinning, and then the child's in charge again.
Are there any teasers you might be able to give people that are listening today, some core concepts of the principles of the parallel process that you can share with parents?
Yeah, so really the parallel process philosophy really comes from, truthfully, my work in wilderness, because what I saw happen is kids magically would just transform in front of our eyes, you know, as wilderness staff, as wilderness therapists. I mean, it didn't necessarily happen overnight, but, you know, 2, 4, 6 weeks, we saw shifts and changes in kids. And I started to really wonder, like, what is it about the wilderness? Like, why did this child transform so much in this 6 week period and become functional, right, in this setting when they were non-functional in the home setting? And so what I tried to do is really find what I call like the core ingredients or the core principles of what that change is. I mean, obviously, families aren't going to go out and live in the woods, right? So we're not saying go into the wilderness. What we're saying is, what is it about the wilderness that promoted this growth, maturation, and, you know, ultimately more resiliency and in children and teens and young adults? And so I kind of came up with these four principles, which I'll sort of just go over again, which is number one is just parents being more in their parental authority, right? The staff were in their authority, right? The staff set the rules and the boundaries. The therapists were clear with their boundaries. That created safety. One of the metaphors I really actually talk about today in my coaching, which I think a lot of parents can resonate with, is I sometimes say, would you rather your child go to a classroom where the teacher's in charge and there's rules and order? Or would you rather your child go to a classroom where the kids are in charge and it's more chaotic? Well, 10 out of 10 parents will tell me, right, A, the teacher in charge with rules and order. Well, why is that? Because there's routine, there's predictability, there's, right, that routine, predictability, those sort of rules, boundaries, and structure actually reduce anxiety for kids. So a lot of parents don't get when they're in their parental authority, it reduces anxiety. So yeah, number one is the being in your parental authority. And then number two, you know, a huge part of wilderness therapy is attunement, is letting kids feel, letting kids have their emotions, not fixing and changing, not rushing them out of it, not rescuing them from it, right? But allowing them to feel, validating the feeling, encouraging the feeling, right? This is the opposite of what we do in our homes, right? In our homes, we tend to want to fix and change. So that emotional attunement is so critical for their growth and maturation. And then number three is just really having those effective boundaries, right? In the wilderness, what I saw is that kids were, emotions were valued, but behavior was held accounted for, right? So you can be angry and you can express it, but if you take it out on someone, say through yelling or defiance, then they'll be held accountable. So that was so clear in the woods, but it's not so clear in homes to allow the feeling and to hold the behavior accountable for. So it's some of these really simple things that were so simple in the wilderness, but how do we transfer to the home? And then the last one is just valuing struggle, right? Every day in the wilderness, the whole premise of wilderness is to put kids in discomfort, right? Taking them out of their home, putting them in an unfamiliar environment around unfamiliar people, wearing clothes that are issued to them, wearing food they're not familiar with, no technology, no friends, no parents. All of that is to create discomfort. So we send our children to this environment to create discomfort, but then they come home and we want them comfortable. So there are these ways that parents are undermining the growth and maturation of wilderness without even knowing it. And so a lot of it is sort of these four principles. I say, if we do these four things and we sort of mix it together, guess what? Maturation just happens. And, you know, so it's pretty exciting when I see parents start to do these four principles in the home. It works. It doesn't magically fix kids, right? Kids may still have anxiety, depression. They may still have substance abuse issues, etc. But what it really does is it reduces the power struggle, right? It reduces the parent-child struggle because it doesn't work anymore, right? Parents just allow them to feel. Parents hold them accountable for their parent, their behavior. Parents let them struggle. So it really reduces that ongoing, as you know, and a lot of parent-child, a lot of these homes, the families we work with, there's just constant drama, power struggles, negotiations, testing, you know, who's running the home, things like that, which really are a distraction from that deeper therapeutic work. So those are sort of the principles that I'm teaching in the class and hopefully giving parents a framework of how they can get clearer. Where are you strong in these four principles, but where do you need to, what do you need to strengthen? What's your edge? And I think, again, that gives parents confidence of kind of a straightforward way of how to bring these skills into the home. Because a lot of parents don't even know what they're doing, why they're stuck, right? They don't know why they're stuck because they're just in their auto responses. So this course is like an opportunity to kind of slow it down and do that deeper self-reflection and become more aware. So actually, they can change the home. And, you know, one of the things I tell parents is, you know, you may not be able to change your kid or fix your kid, but if you change yourself or you examine your stuckness or what you're bringing to the parent-child relationship, then you're actually changing your end of the parent-child relationship, which is going to probably shift the parent-child relationship, which probably will likely shift the home, which then might shift your child. So there is an opportunity to impact their child, but the goal is to work on themselves. So,
right. You know, a good percentage of our listeners obviously have had children in wilderness or have children in wilderness. Some don't have any children in wilderness and never have. And so as you reflect about your coaching process, what would you say to those listeners who might not have a child who maybe needed the level of care that wilderness therapy offers?
Absolutely. Well, you know, my class is not necessarily, I mean, you could be at any stage of having a child struggle, from a child struggling at home to a child struggling and going to outpatient therapy or home therapy or in a program. So you don't have to have done wilderness. I just sort of frame where my philosophy comes from. And I believe these four ingredients promote maturation no matter what. And so it is a template. It is an opportunity for parents, whether they did wilderness or not, to bring in more structure into the home to, you know, enable more accountability, more growth and maturation in their home. So they don't have to do wilderness by any means. It's more just giving me the background. So,
yeah, I always think that kind of in wilderness, you and I have been on the front lines, as it were, of the mental health and addiction challenges. And so there are lessons from that front line that we can bring back to any parent. And I think I'm with you. I feel the same way about my books and my teaching, that the lessons are applicable to matter what stage you're at. You know, right now at the time of this recording and this airing, we're all in the mid of the COVID-19 pandemic. And so right now there might even be special challenges and needs for families. So my question is, how do you think, what do you have to offer that might be helpful for parents right now who might be stuck at home with their kids during such an uncertain time?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we're going through right now is sort of unprecedented. It's unknown, and we're just in this new landscape. And many parents are now parenting full time when maybe they weren't even expecting to, right? Maybe they had a child come home from a program. There's some sort of therapeutic programs where I know the kids went home. Maybe their child isn't at home and their child's still in a program, or maybe their child has always been at home. And so there's different stages, but I think having a child who's already struggling, you know, at home now full time is a lot for parents. It's a lot to be homeschooling. It's a lot to be working at a distance. It's a lot to be knowing how to have the therapeutic response or how to continue their growth and maturation. So, you know, my hope with the class is that it is an opportunity for parents to have some more support during this time, that they can continue their children's growth and maturation, even in this, you know, quarantining and, you know, at home, you know, experience that we're all going through. And so my hope is that it can be a support for parents during this time. Because again, if you're already in a place of doubt, if you're already not clear, and then your child's home and your child's pushing for this or that, or this or that, more tech time, or I don't need to do that chore, or I don't need to be respectful, or I'm mad. And then, you know, you can just, parents can relapse into a lot of old patterns. So I'm hopeful that it can be an at-home support. And then I also think this is just a unique challenge that we're all in. And I'm finding, and I'll just share personally, I'm finding in my own parenting that I'm having to strengthen things because my kids are home now all the time. And I'm noticing even ways they used to sort of, I don't want to say manipulate me, but you know, I guess manipulate me, you know, get me to do things that I, you know, felt like I should do. And now I'm thinking, you know, we're all under this together. We're all struggling. I don't need to bend to my child. I don't need to accommodate my child. I don't need to do this little thing to make you happy that maybe I might have felt as a working parent before, right? My boundaries, and even, you know, I teach this stuff, but certainly we're all human. We all get sucked in to our kids. And I'm finding in myself, I'm strengthening in my parenting because we're all in this really unique time where it's these unprecedented sort of restrictions upon us. And hey, everyone has to figure it out. There's no special treatment for our kids anymore. Everyone's going through this together. So for example, I was just talking to a family and they said, oh, our daughter doesn't want to go for walks or doesn't want to go for hikes. So, and they just sort of threw up their hands. And I was saying, to be in your parental authority, say this is family time. We're going for a walk. We're going for a hike. Like, we don't have to give our kids so much choice all the time. And what's the undercurrent of that? Trying to make them happy. It's not our jobs to make them happy. And so right now, it's really actually a really critical time to, like, what I call rewrite the script, rewrite this parent-child script. I find myself stepping more into my parental authority. I'm finding myself doing a lot more attunement, because my daughters are having valid emotions, right? This is awful, right? They're losing school, sports, friends, right? Disconnection, boredom. It's a really challenging time. And so I'm finding myself doing a lot more attunement where, you know, maybe I would have that quick answer before of, oh, don't worry, or see the positive. And now I'm just saying, yeah, it is really tough. Yeah, this is really difficult. Tell me more. Yeah, it isn't fair. You're right. You should be with your friends. You should be in school. You know, and I'm not judging this, whatever the rules around the quarantine. What I'm more doing is trying to get on their level and validate and listen. And what I'm noticing is the more I do the attunement, the more they move through it. And they're like, oh, and they move on to the next thing after about 5 or 10 minutes because they felt heard, because I let them feel it and process it. So I'm finding I have to strengthen my parenting during this time using these four principles because I have to, because these times are calling for it. And then the last thing I would say about it is there's actually a real blessing here. You know, just like in wilderness, right? There's so much out of kids' control, right? They can't control what they're doing every day. They can't control what they're eating. They can't control who their peers are. They can't just go to a room and shut the door, right? There's no escape in wilderness. And I sort of feel like we're in this unique time where we're not in control, right? We can't go to school. We can't go do the things we want to do. We can't do those things outside the house. And so what do we have to do? We have to adapt. We can't change our outer environment, so we have to change our inner environment. And so what I'm trying to really emphasize to parents is that this is a unique time for growth and maturation, sort of a humbling of our egos, if you will, and our children's egos, right? That entitlement. It's an opportunity for them to be humbled and to adapt and to accept and to make that inner shift, which I call maturation, right? When kids have to change their inner environment. And so there is a lot of growth coming out of this time, as much as it is challenging.
I've noticed for me, I can relate to that regression for everybody in the family. And so I think, you know, obviously you planned your program long before the COVID pandemic was present, but it's great timing for people who are at home and meeting that extra stress and challenge without the opportunity for resources face to face. So I think it's a great, great fit right now. So I think, Chrissy, I have a two-part question. When we worked together, that was right when you had your first child, right as you were leaving wilderness. And so I'm wondering first what you've learned from being a mother that was the greatest lesson that then you could then turn around and offer to the parents that you were working with? Because for a time, like all of us, you didn't have children. And then you had children. And what were the lessons from that personal experience that then you could offer to parents? And then the second question, or it's kind of the part B of the question, is what have been the greatest challenges as a mother? As you've been teaching and bringing families through the parallel process, what have you found to be your greatest challenges, your greatest lessons?
Okay, great questions. So obviously I could go in a lot of different directions here, but I guess what I would say is I think my greatest lesson is just always evolving, but I guess I've just had to continue to grow and change as a parent to show up the way I want to show up. So for example, I think when my kids were little, being a mom's overwhelming. I'm someone who struggled with sleep. I struggled with anxiety. I struggled with just doing it all, right? Having a career, raising kids, balancing everything, which I'm sure is very common for most moms. And I think the undercurrent of that is what? Trying to do it all right. Trying to, look together or be together or have everything on the outside look right, on some level. And again, I don't even know that I was fully conscious of that, but I think there was that underlying thrust, right? Which probably I carried from my childhood. And I feel as though as I've grown as a parent and as a person, I've kind of just let it get messier. I've let it be more authentic, more honest, and like less controlling, I guess I would say, more of me stepping out of the way, because I've had to just apply everything I've learned or everything I teach, to my kids. And, even if it's simple things like when they were kindergarten and third grade, I decided to step out of the kitchen. I'm just like, because I found myself being controlling in the kitchen. And I just said, you guys can do breakfast and lunch by yourself before we go to school. Because we had a struggle in the morning, right? Around, I'd say, what do you want for breakfast? What do you want for lunch? And they're like, I don't know. And then the time would tick. And then we'd get in this power struggle. And so finally, I just said, you know what, you guys, you can get breakfast whatever you want when you're ready, lunch whenever you want when you're ready, and this is the time we're leaving. And actually, they loved it. They wanted to get into the kitchen, but it was messy. There was orange juice on the floor and burnt toast. But you know what? That's how they learn. I had to get out of the way. I don't even go in the kitchen. I just would go upstairs. So I've learned to just get out of the way, number one. I've learned to let them struggle and have pain. My oldest daughter had a really tough middle school being excluded and unfortunately that sort of subtle bullying that girls do. And it was really, really bad for a long time. And of course I wanted to rescue it and I wanted to fix it, but I had to just attune and let her feel the pain. I just had to do it because there was no fix. I can't fix that. And you know what? She's come out way more resilient. She's really good friend now. She's in high school and she's learned what a good friend is after. So I've learned to be grateful for their discomfort. I've learned to be grateful for their struggle. Even though that's not my auto reflex, right? All of us, our auto reflex is to protect and shield them from pain and discomfort. But I really try to flip it around and say, if this is landing on their lap, there's some growth and maturation here. And, things certainly trigger me for sure. And I will say one thing for whatever reason, probably because I was an athlete, sports get to me more like than athletics. So I find myself getting way more enmeshed with their sports that I have to step out of and just say it's their experience, it's their process. And I have to step out, And I'm not a hovering parent with academics at all, but sometimes I find myself that way with sports. And because I feel like on some level, the sports culture with kids today is pretty toxic, specializing in when you're seven, And so I find that I don't want to be that parent, but I get triggered by the other parents that are doing this hyper focus on sports. So I have to work on it, right? I have to keep unenmeshing. I have to keep looking at my part and just trying to show up for my kids without an agenda, right? If I have an agenda about their sports, then I'm enmeshed, right? And so I have to, so it's a constant process of working on, so it's not a simple answer. I would just say it's a constant process of working on myself or my ego and just supporting their growth and maturation, because I want them to be their most authentic selves. Like at the end of the day, that's my goal. My goal is not necessarily they're happy, but they're their most authentic selves so they can be and do whatever they want. And so I have to show up in the most authentic way, right? Without some script that I'm molding them for something, you know? And, right. And that's hard because we have all these blind, right? The ego's sneaky, you know, and we don't, you know, I don't even know I have an agenda sometimes. And then I realize, oh, I have some agenda there. And that's why I'm actually really okay with this whole quarantining, because you know what? They're going to grow and they're going to mature and it's uncomfortable, and that's okay. I'm okay with my kids feeling uncomfortable. I'm okay with my kids feeling pain and discomfort. And so that's probably been my greatest lesson in growth, is to just keep checking myself and letting them have their experience and knowing that their pain, their discomfort is okay. It's part of their journey. So
what I like about the examples you use with your own children is that your children you're talking about it from an age long before a lot of the parents that we've worked with, you and I have worked with, where they get into trouble, right? Where mental health issues are apparent. And so I love it because so many parents to me say it doesn't apply to young children. You know, these ideas, these concepts, principles, tools don't apply to young children. But from your examples, you do really, really well. Like with the kitchen example, you do a really good job of helping people understand that the basics, the basis starts in the earliest years. And I think that's great, really helpful.
Thanks. To add to that point, you know, that's really so. And I know maybe we're going to segue to my other books, but I wrote The Parallel Process first. And a lot of parents said to me, Chrissy, this is, you know, such a great book. And I wish I had it 15 years ago. And you know what? It works with the younger siblings, but I never would have bought a treatment book, right? When my kid was five. So that's really what was the impetus to writing my second book, which is Brave Parenting. And Brave Parenting, to kind of piggyback on your comment, Brad, is really about building resiliency, I say, from three and up, right? Because at any age, we can let kids be with discomfort. At any age, we can let kids learn to feel their feeling from start to finish and process it and, you know, not do all this protecting and shielding and controlling that, again, we don't even know we're doing in these auto responses. So I think we can promote their resiliency, their emotional growth, their maturation. So kids are developmentally on track, right? And I think today we see a lot of kids that are what I would say are have delayed maturation, right? They might be 15, but they're like 12, or they might be 18, but they look like they're 15, right? Because they're just behind and because they weren't feeling their feelings. They weren't, having those discomforts, hitting those walls. And that's why it's okay to do that. And that's really what the Brave Parenting book really discusses.
You know, I really hear throughout your work kind of the way that your experience as a wilderness therapist informed your parenting and informed your approach to parenting. I mean, it comes out over and over again with, like you talk about in wilderness, the ability to both attune to their feelings, but also to hold boundaries and accountability. And also the other theme of, you know, we saw this, you and I saw this, we've seen this our careers, where children in wilderness demonstrate their resiliency by dealing with very difficult and uncomfortable things. And it really is apparent to me about how that informs you.
And it's just the opposite of our culture today, right? I mean, we want our kids happy. We want to remove discomfort. We want to, you know, cheer up sadness and, you know, cajole their anxiety and, you know, smooth over their anger. And so wilderness presented such a different marked change from the way our society is, which is valuing emotions, all emotions. There's no better or worse, right? They're all important. They're just information. And so, you know, it's hard to keep that present and alive in the outside world. But the more I go back to that, the more, you know, it's so valuable for our kids.
Well, tell us a little bit about your other books. You started to mention Brave Parenting, but tell us about your work and how parents can follow you and find out more about your work.
Yeah. So, you know, my first book, Parallel Process, is really designed for kids who've been in, you know, some type of treatment. And then I wrote Brave Parenting, which is really about just promoting resiliency for kids at all ages and parents knowing how to respond for their children's emotional growth, right? We're so focused on every other type of growth, right? Them being smart, them, you know, all these other areas, but, you know, that emotional growth, that inner resiliency, I think is so important and perhaps not addressed enough. And then the third book I wrote actually came out of Brave Parenting. So a woman in Colorado who was a fourth grade teacher was really struggling with her son, who was, I think, a first grader at the time. And she like Googled, you know, resiliency and parenting or whatever. And my book, Brave Parenting, came up. So she ordered it and read it and applied all the concepts for a whole summer with her son. He couldn't leave her side. He wouldn't go upstairs without her. He wouldn't like ride his bike around the block. He was just very codependent and needy. By the end of the summer, he was upstairs by himself. He was biking around the neighborhood. He was doing work independently. So she saw just real milestone shifts in doing these, again, applying a philosophy that where she could get clearer and more confident in her parenting. And so then she went to her classroom that fall and she started up, said, you know what? I'm going to apply these concepts to my classroom because I realized, she said, I'm a helicopter teacher, which is kind of funny. And I'm not a teacher, so I couldn't totally relate to it. But when she said it, it made sense. She said, you know, Chrissy, my students do well around me, but they go out to recess and they fall apart, or a sub comes in and they fall apart. She says, that's dependency. She says, just like my son, like he did well with me, but he couldn't be away from me. And she goes, I'm a helicopter. I'm taking care of all their emotions. I'm right. This sort of codependency and enmeshment stuff doesn't just go away, you know, in just the parent-child relationship, right? It manifests in all relationships. So it was really interesting. So she started applying it to her classroom and did all these amazing things, which I probably be a whole nother podcast to tell you about. But she then contacted me and said, do you want to co-author a book? And I was like, sounds great. So I flew out to Colorado and visited her classroom. And so we just started using the Brave Parenting concepts, but then applying them to a classroom setting and applying, again, all these same things, attunement, you know, parents being or teachers being in their teacher authority, letting kids struggle. And she said a lot of it was letting go of control. Right? Letting go of having this control over and letting kids problem solve, letting kids feel, letting kids navigate things internally. And she actually, when I came to her classroom, I was really blown away because the classroom sort of ran itself. It wasn't this teacher helicoptering around. You know, they were all very independent, self-regulating, problem solving, and collaboratively working through issues and problems that came up in the classroom. So anyway, that's my third book, Brave Teaching, and that's just starting to get into some schools. And so it's really exciting. You know, it's a lot of different pulling me in a lot of different directions, but it's really exciting. And I was just going to say that I just started Instagram at the end of August. So that's been pretty exciting. I'm trying to sort of build a platform there where I'm putting out, you know, parenting quotes and videos to just, again, bring this, because obviously there's wonderful programs and support sort of in this niche adolescent, treatment industry. But I want to jump outside that a little bit and work, you know, with classrooms and work with parents of different ages. And just building these resiliency skills is so important at younger ages for prevention. I remember doing so. A few schools have actually done like books. What's it called? Book groups on on Brave Parenting, and then they're doing Brave Teaching also. And I went and visited a group, and this mom said to me, "Chrissy, it was the simplest thing." She said, "I just told my kids that it's okay to be mad at me, but it's not okay to be disrespectful to me. And, you know, you and I know that that's such a 101 from wilderness, right? But this was a mom with like an 11-year-old or a 7-year-old, you know, a 2-7-year-old and 11-year-old. And she said, I just told them, because she'd come home from school and they'd be all over her. And she said, I told them it's okay to be mad at me, but it's not okay to be disrespectful. And she said, they stopped and regulated. She said it was amazing, the simplest little things, right? And she actually had her son write a sorry. He said he didn't know he was being disrespectful. And he wrote a little note saying he was sorry because he didn't know he was being disrespectful. He just was just putting his, you know, his emotions on mom. And so these really simple things can actually have huge, you know, outcomes for younger ages, which is pretty exciting too.
Well, thank you, Chrissy. Thank you for what you've added to our field, to our parents. I know many, many parents I've worked with have used your book and your work to help further them. So thank you for what you've done to help us do our work, and for on behalf of the parents that have been moved and have learned from your work. Thank you for them. And thank you for joining me today. It's a real pleasure to have you and to talk to you.
Well, thank you, Brad. And I've always admired the work you do. And yeah, I think clearly I started my career working with you, and I think that you have been inspirational to so many. So thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us. And I hope these, as always, are a helpful point of contact. And again, one more time for your website, Chrissy.
It's www.parallel-process.com.
So great. So go to parallel-process.com for more information or to contact Chrissy. All right, folks, I'll talk to you next time. Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye.